OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is the first Hurling Pod we're reviewing eventually this week, weekend one of the National Hurling League. Tipperary putting a dozen points in Galway in the end. Liam Cahill's new look side trouncing the Tribesmen in Salt Hill. Kilkenny struck late, registering a first league win against Clare in a decade, avenging the league final from last year with that win in Ennis as well. And the debate has gone on and on and on and on, and it continues about the lack of hurling on TV, reignited by Cork and Limerick in a broadcasting saga that finally came to an end. We're recording on Wednesday evening at the moment. It ended this afternoon around about lunchtime, and the game is going to be on the TG Carr player and their app on Saturday. But generally, hurling's got a pretty rough shake over the first 2 weeks. Not as rough as it's been for James Skehill, though, who, for those who are watching the video form of this right now, is literally in the dark. How close to recording, Skehill, did your power go?
So it's currently 5 past 6. My fucking power went at 5 to 6. So I am here in darkness. I know some people might say we're a bit backward in East Galway, but I feel like I'm in a cave. You know, like, I'm in full darkness. I can't see my notes. I have a glass of my waddy somewhere. I don't know where it is. I'm afraid I'll knock it again. I'll go to search for it. And I'm just, you know, I'm depending off the light off my laptop, which loses power. Like, I had 2 hours and 9 minutes a minute ago. I have 1 hour and 52 minutes now. So the battery even is getting drained.
Yeah.
I think right. I hear a child downstairs crying because she probably walked into a door, you know, so like, because she couldn't see it. As I said today, lads, I want to fight someone. You know what I mean? I just want to fight someone. So, and I'm sweating. I'm sweating because I'm so vexed. Like,
for those who aren't familiar, well, we use the 14 minutes of power on your laptop very, very carefully indeed. Your power has effectively been gone since the storm. It came back for what, 5 hours maybe and gone again?
Yeah, it went Thursday night. It came back yesterday evening from like 7. It went today at 11. It came back at like 5. And now it's gone again at 5 to 6. Whatever in the name of God they're at. I can just picture some lad just flicking a switch up and down just to piss us off. You know, just like, just to piss us off. You know what I mean? And Murph, I was in Roscommon today and yeah. I was coming out and this lad was looking at me funny as I'm coming out. And I said, this lad now is going to say something. And I was in bad form because I heard the power was still gone. And he goes something like, I'm going to fight a guy, man, now. And I said, do? Let's fight, because I said, I'm ready to go. He was a king, man. He was a fan of the pod. He was
only I'll go in.
But I was like, yeah, let's dance. Like, let's dance.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't realize you were actually in the mood to go fighting in a car park somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He grabbed my arm and I said, if you want to fight, we'll fight. Like. Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm very if I can be hyper or emotional on podcasts in a normal week, you get me going now. So
yeah, I'm kind
up,
of wondering. So I want to start with the TV saga, and now there's part of me going, let's just prod him slightly and talk about the Galway game at the weekend, because everyone wants to see that response, because I'm very mindful that the power could well go very, very quickly at the rate that it's fallen at the moment. So what is your feeling about the fallout? Like, did you get to see the game last week, Skehill, given the power, or were the gods kind to you and said, actually, I can't watch the game live on TV?
Well, they made me watch the gods. So the gods were, they struck me twice, basically. In the sense that I had no power at home, so obviously couldn't watch it at home. The village had no power, but my eldest daughter's birthday was on. So I was at a 6-year-old's birthday party in Toro Pet Farm with 20 6-year-olds trying to watch the match. So,
And you saw it, did doing. You? Well, so saw it to an extent.
That wasn't exactly ideal. I saw most of it, right? I saw most of it between trying to keep kids alive, you know, stop them from falling against stuff, you know, stopped them from crying, you know. All I'll just say is mothers are godsends. Mothers of those kids are godsends. So hang on, lads. I just turn on my torch here so I can see my notes, okay?
Yeah. I mean, a vital thing to do. Right, so let's go with it then. So Tip were 17 points up at one stage in that game, Skehill. In a way, there's a gloss put on the result at the end by the two late goals that go in by the two substitutes for Galway, Declan McLaughlin, and the second goal was another mistake by Rhys Shelley as well. So he probably won't be happy with the two goals they conceded late on. But the reality is that the Tip looked at least 12 points the better team throughout the game. How bad was that performance?
It was bad. Was it going to be that bad? I said last year towards the end of the podcast here, that it might get worse to get better, and I think we're probably in that scenario now at the minute, whereby We have to blood new players. We have to give players a chance. Sometimes in Galway, there's people guilty of looking at a player for 40 minutes or 50 minutes on their debut or their first game out and saying, right, he's not up to it, and then scratch him. You know, that's not going to be the case in this instance. Like, we debuted a couple of under-20s. We said under-20. We lads were under-20 last year. There's positives to take over. You know, it's context more than excuses, as I heard during the week, that we're trying to build a team and we're not going to be able to challenge, you know, the Clare's, Kilkenny's, Cork's of this world just yet. So I just think there's going to have to be patience, lads. Patience. Now, of course, I'm disappointed. The story was told about the, you know, I often look at statistics and look at scoring elements from different parts of the pitch. From midfield up, we scored 10 points in play. From midfield up, Tipperary got 215, you know, which is a poor return, which means we defended bad. And if you remember last year, when we played Tipperary below on Thurles, I expressed concern over our defensive, I suppose, frailties, you know, and that kind of showed up again at the weekend. So look, Tipperary were sharp. They look good. They look like they've been together a while. They look very, very strong, very lean, very, very fit, all of them. Kind of physically imposing, nearly like the, you nearly associate with Limerick from previous. So they seem to be getting their act together. And for Galway, it's a simple case of, look, that one's done, move on to the next. And there's a hard place to go to next weekend.
Oof, Kilkenny and Clare over the next couple of weekends for Galway, so it doesn't get any easier, really. Murph, we were messing each other, and I wasn't sure if Scale had lost power at that point or if he was just ignoring us as the scores continued to kind of tick along for Tipperary during the game. So Gaelic Game Statsman, I think as he's called on Instagram at this stage, was keeping a track of the stats. Tipperary, who again, a bit like Galway, had four debutants, had 10 more turnovers during the game, and their shooting accuracy was almost 10% better as well. This was a really, really one-sided affair, Murph.
It was, yeah, it was one-sided affair, and really, was it after the penalty incident there, it really just kind of swung things, and you know, I'm trying to compare and contrast games, and like, I'd be looking at the Galway thing. The bottom line is that there's no emergency buttons have to be hit here for Galway either. Like, I mean, if you look at Galway over the last, and I'm not trying to be nice or you know, preserve James Skettle's mental frailties at the moment.
He has no power, be as nice as he
yeah,
could be.
No, but like, I mean, at the moment, before any of these matches, across the board this weekend or last weekend, I would have been saying, look, there's no reason for panic on any team if you get beaten by 10 points here or you lose by 10 points, or if, you know, there's very little can be taken from these games at the moment. If you look at Micheál Donoghue, there's been a fair exodus of experienced heads gone out of that dressing room over the winter. And, you know, maybe that's just part of moving on, players getting in new lads. And like Micheál Donoghue was saying after the game, he blooded a few players there at the match of the weekend. If you look at Tipperary, they've probably had that process last year. Granted, you know, the likes of Bonner Maher has moved on and Shamey Callanan over the last few years. But they've probably blooded a few lads and also brought in a few more lads in the process. But if you look at the way the game swayed, it was probably down to that bit of youth that was on the field that weren't able to keep Galway in the game. Similar if you look at Kilkenny and Clare. Like, it looked like at the start of the Kilkenny-Clare game, Clare were going to, you know, blow Kilkenny out of the water. David Reedy had scored about 6 points after about 20 minutes. But it was maybe the fact that Kilkenny had a few experienced players on the field just to get them back into the game. That was all that was required. Where it just seemed with Galway and Tipperary that Tipperary really had the bit between the teeth. It was really impressive, you know, and it looked like that they were hurling with a real aggression. They were very aggressive in the tackles, and all those things were just absent for Galway. And when you're not doing that, like when you're not tackling hard, when you're not in the fight, the game just gets away from you, like, you know, and when you're not kind of steadying the ship, you don't have that ability to steady it. Like, I was looking at a few tackles there, like Ronan Maher in the second half. He got tackled, got a free out, got up, wasn't happy with the Galway player, nearly went after him. Not in a bad way, but it just gave an insight into where his head was at. They were up for the fight, and that was really it. They were up for the fight over the weekend. They were, I suppose, they were far more clinical then as well in their attack. They were far more clinical in terms of use of the ball, and they were also direct. They were running really hard at Galway. And when you put all those things together, for me, it makes sense as to how it came about. If I was a Galway supporter, I'd be looking at Micheál Donoghue and saying, look, he's going to need plenty of time. He's a proven track record in terms of being with Galway, how he molds his teams, what he does. This is just part of the process. And likewise with Tipperary, we're saying, brilliant, great start. It's a great place to build from. But likewise, you know, you're going to have to build from here as well. This isn't a case of that you have it figured out and on we go. You know, Galway have to pick themselves up, go to Kilkenny, go to Clare. That's going to be tough now over the next few weekends. Tipperary have started in a good place, and it's good for them, you know, coming off the back of a pre-season and winter training. They have a really positive start now to the year, which I suppose to say a lot of Tipperary fans over the last 2 years will be saying, this is good, this is great. And I think Tipperary fans will be even looking at this game going,
there's good hallmarks here potentially for Munster. But the one thing I have to go back and say is that Tipperary, you go back 2 years ago, I think it was, and at the start of Liam Cahill's tenure, they started the league really well and they were looking really good and just kind of faltered towards the end of it. And likewise, we've seen teams start the league really bad and then just kind of turn things around towards the end of the league and entered around Robin phase in a really positive position. So I'm not trying to say everything and say nothing at the same time. I'm basically just saying that, like, okay, bad performance from Galway, but it's not doom and gloom. It's not the end of the world. They have an opportunity to go and put a good performance in against Kilkenny. Whatever the result is, grand. But I think what Micheál Donoghue will be looking at is, lads, we weren't in the fight. We weren't tackling. You know, our conversion rate and all these things, they're not good enough. We have to improve. And then come the Clare game, we have to improve again. But full credit to Tipperary. Really good performance under bad conditions. I think another point I'd say is the pitch didn't look great now either. In Galway, I saw the Armagh Galway game even the night before. I think I'm right in saying it was the night before, and it looked fairly hairy there as well. So, look, under tough conditions, Tipperary looked good the other night.
Yeah, it was John Fleming got the other goal for Galway. But yeah, when I looked at that pitch, and Skell, I don't want to get you going here on Pearse Stadium and going across the Salt Hill, but you showed us a picture from where the Galway 20s were hurling a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't just purely the storm damage. The pitch has been in rough enough condition. The floodlights look great on Saturday night. Pitch not so great.
No, like, and look, my stance is very clear in the sense that if someone in our county, like, was that be a board level or even facility level, do something well, I'd be the first man to say it. But in the same instance, to say if our surfaces or our facilities are below par, I'd say it too. And looking at the games, both the football on Saturday and the hurling on Sunday, the pitch was embarrassing, to be fair. It was extremely poor conditions. It was lack of maintenance. That's all it is. That's, you go across to look at Clare Kilkenny and the pitch is like a carpet. So, I don't want to hear about weather conditions. I don't want to hear about, you know, extra circumstances. It's the same for everybody in the country, and other teams' pitches or other counties' pitches were in excellent condition, but ours wasn't. Very, very poor. It's a average surface at the best times. It requires maintenance. It requires effort. But when we played the seniors, say 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was catastrophic. It was the worst I've ever seen the Pearse Stadium surface, and it didn't improve by too much, you know, on Sunday. But nonetheless, as we always say, it's the same for both teams. It was the same for Tipperary as it was for Galway. And Tipperary made use of it. They didn't care for it too much. And I want to touch on a point, Murphy, you were saying there, but like you were extremely correct when you talk about tackling, hard running, up for the fight. That's probably the most concerning part for me. I can take technical errors all day long. I can take physical errors, you know, in terms of, you know, bad passes, bad shots. I can take all that because we can really work on that from a technical perspective, skill perspective. I cannot take bad body language, bad demeanor, you know, let's say lack of fight, lack of effort. And there was just some instances that I saw on Sunday whereby players who've been there for a while, you know, didn't want to tackle hard, moaning and complaining towards the sideline. Body language was of a negative, kind of a negative image. I hate that shit. Like, that shit drives me soft, drives me insane. And I guarantee your supporters pick up on that too, and your teammates pick up on it, right?
Yeah.
That's something that you never, ever associate with certain counties like Limerick or Kilkenny. You never associate that kind of them. But for some reason, it happens our county from time to time. So if we're looking at things to fix in Galway, it's not shooting. It's not, of course, there's technical stuff to fix, but really and truly, it's that grit between teeth, that fight, that bit of bad-mindedness, if you want to put it that way, that bit of grit, let's say, that you'd have in every single club match in Galway. This is the thing, you see. Every club match in Galway is like a match to the death. You know what I mean? There's no question about it over there in club game. I'm not sure does that kind of, you know, transform or transfer into the county setup. You know, sometimes bitterness, it's been said before, but that's probably a bit extreme. But I'd love to see extreme fight in the Galway lads. And sometimes it takes the heat of Championship hurling to bring it out in them. You know, so like I said a while ago, I won't press the panic button. I do think Tipperary were much better drilled in terms of the way they use the ball. I say our deliveries to our forwards were not good at all, in the sense that it actually contributed to us turning over the ball. And you might remember last year I was saying about Conor Whelan, you know, contrast the way Conor Whelan has to fight for a ball versus Aaron Gillan. Aaron Gillan's always in lovely space. Conor Whelan has a lead above his back.
Yeah.
Challenging, you know what I mean? It's because the quality of ball we're getting to a full forward line is quite poor, and it facilitates the opposition to turn us over. So when I hear a turnover rate of plus 10 to Tipperary, you know, I don't question it because I can see how bad it is. And if you look at our shooting straight after half time, it was terrible. It was a classic case of when you have the breeze, you always say at halftime, don't be going shooting crazy now because you have the breeze, still use the ball. But we shot and shot and shot and we shot wide. I think we had, let's say, five wides in a row before the second Tipperary goal came. So that was like, you know, that was your nail in the coffin, Les. If you're not converting one side and you start conceding goals the far side, you're only one way loser.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point as well, Murph. I did wonder about this during the game, the type of ball that Galway were getting into their forwards, where, you know, Tipperary moved the ball around fairly well. And we'll talk maybe about the way that Kilkenny actually managed possession a lot better against the wind in the game against Clare as well. But there were times there where Galway were putting in 50-50 at best balls into their forward line. And in a way, that probably helped Tipperary during the match as well.
Well, it did, because, you know, sometimes there's nearly a downside of having a lad like Conor Whelan in full forward, because you feel like if you're an outfield player and you're a bit tired, you feel like you have an out ball to lump it in on top of him. And it's like Skettle is saying there, he used to go fight for that ball the whole time. Whereas if you nearly had a fella who wasn't that physically strong type of character in there, you'd actually probably more inclined to get the head up and look for and pop a pass. And that's not the reason that Galway weren't passing the ball as well. A lot more of it was just down to that Tipperary just had it in their head. They had a game plan and they didn't vary from it. And that's, you know, that's something that managers endeavour to get into their teams, is that let's not vary from this regardless how the game is going. Now, the one thing that was in benefit for Tipperary was that the game was going in their favour because of how they deployed themselves and how hard they were tackling and they were going out with intent. But nevertheless, you know, they stuck to the game plan. When they didn't have the ball, they were fighting for it, looking for the ball, looking. And it kind of builds this feeling of, it's very enjoyable. Like, you know, when you have a team that's fighting for the ball and you're hungry and you're looking for it, and then when you turn it over, you're using it well. Those two things are just so dangerous when a team does it, because they're basic fundamentals that all over the pitch, it's like something that's infectious throughout the field. Then if you see your full forward coming out tackling, or your half forwards, and they're getting stuck in, they're turning over ball, the backs get their back up, then they kind of go, you know, ball comes down our end, they're fighting for it and they're tackling. And something I'd say about Tipperary, and I would always say that any team I was involved with, I always looked for it in terms of, I knew we were in a good place when it was happening, was if your tackling was borderline, in that, okay, you're going to give away a few frees, but you're playing right up against the line. Like Tommy used to always say that, like right up there. That's where I felt Tipperary were tackling the other day. And that's a compliment to Tipperary, that they were right up there. Whereas Micheál Donoghue will be going away saying, lads, where was the bite in us? Like Micheál Donoghue, I'm sure, would have happily left Saul till the other day, losing by 3 points, but having ticked the box, were we fighting? Yep, we were fighting. Were we endeavouring to get the ball back? Were we tackling? Were we hooking? Were we doing all those basic things? He'd have to big X there and say, no, we weren't. And that's where he'll be looking more so. And I'd be looking there before I'd be kind of going, lads, using the ball, you know, moving the ball around and so on. Because to be honest, yes, they had opportunities, and yes, they shot incorrectly at times, but a lot of those things will get fixed a lot better when a team is hungry, a team is fighting for each other, a team is supporting each other. You'll actually rectify those a lot quicker than just, let's say, if you go in, you're training with Galway now on Tuesday night or on Thursday night, and you go in training and you're doing all shooting. That's not where the root of the problem was, really, with Galway the other night. So, yeah, look, it's... You can look at the shooting all you want, but for me, I think it was back to basics in terms of just your grit, your determination, and just, you know, not letting Tipperary come up to your back door and bully you. That's something as well, I think teams, you know, if you go to Tipperary there, Tipperary people wouldn't like to see the Tipperary team getting bullied. Like, if you reverse that around, if Galway went down there, Tipperary bullied Galway up in Salt Hill the way that Tipperary wouldn't like to be bullied in their own backyard. Like, there's an emotional thing there as well. So I think there's a few things there for Micheál Donoghue to unpack. But likewise, I think if we go to the other side, I think Liam Callan will be really happy with even the debutants and the lads he brought off the bench. Do you know, there seemed to be just something apart of the panel there last Sunday. But again, they have to carry this on. They have to keep it going. There's no point in just one flash in the pan up in Salt Hill and not reproducing it again. There's no point in doing that. So, but at least the green shoots are there for Tipperary to go, look, we have something to build on here.
Yeah, people joke about the tip is back thing, but in this case, it's actually Tip's rebuild at this stage. And like, I think a lot of people have picked up off the weekend, Skell, Liam Cowell's comments about, you know, knowledgeable hurling fans in Tipperary will know what they're trying to do, and unknowledgeable fans will come and knock them anyway. But if you think, let's say, like Morris maybe has a new life at 11 now, you had Dylan Walsh and Gerard O'Connor smacking the goals to effectively kill the game. And then another big plus for them is that Darren McCarthy comes in and looks good on the dead balls in a general sense. Stuck away his penalty, hit over 5 frees, hit over a 65. Did so while Gerard O'Connor was on the pitch as well. And last year we wondered a bit about who the free taker was going to be, and maybe it would be Ford, maybe it would be O'Connor. If Darren McCarthy can get himself a place in this team now, potentially they've got another good dead ball striker available to them as well.
Yeah, like we've said a lot of times in this podcast, like if you're looking to improve a team, the fastest way to do it is recruitment. you know. And so when you have people coming up from an under-20 squad like McCarthy and adding to a team, and say, and it wasn't just, I know, the, you look at the score sheet and look at the statistics, you look at McCarthy and you see 1-6 beside his name, all from dead balls, but number one, they have to be scored. Number two, he was fouled himself. And number three, he's able to retain the ball inside in the full forward line. So he has the trifecta going there. If you're carrying a free taker, it's difficult. But when you have a person like him who's physically strong for his age, I have to give it to him, you know, and retain the ball, that's an asset. That's a real asset. You know, so you don't have to have an over-dependency on players who've been there a long time to take the frees and might necessarily have the same, I would say, efficiency as McCarthy. So, like, they've built a squad. I think it takes time to build a squad. You know, and it's grand putting players into positions and hoping they thrive. But like, again, I've got to go back to a point that Murph touched on. They tried for each other. They tried really hard for each other, regardless of stature in the team. You know what I mean? So, like, really impressed with Connors. You know, Tynan did well. You know, they just had a team whereby, you know, with Galway didn't, in the sense that they had lads in every kind of area of the pitch, particular lines, who were ready for the fight, and it transferred up along. So, like Maher, as you said yourself, Murph, he was ready for the fight. Then you had Willie Connors, Joe McFeely, O'Connor, yeah, let's say, Walsh, McCarthy, etc., Morris, all ready to rock, as you, and all contributing, all scoring. Like I said, they got, what, 215 from midfield up. So they're a very proud county, Tipperary. They went through a bit of a spell, obviously, having to go through this rebuild. Had great success, to say, up to, you know, 2019 and so on. So they're looking to get back on the horse. And when you've got a county like them, who are very proud, are steeped in history, they usually bounce back pretty quick. You know, you're not talking about a 15, 20-year barren spell. At max, you could be talking about 5 or 6 or 7. So they're what? They're in year six, you know, of that process, you could say. So, and they can start looking to their underage teams, like the 20s and the minors, successful teams, to add to this group. So I don't think they're not going away. And it goes back to the old question, who's going to own a Munster? I don't want to call it. let's leave it off for another 5 or 6 weeks and see where that takes us.
Yeah. We can postpone that talk for a while.
Yeah, like I won't put too much, just as well, just like I won't panic with Galway. I won't overvalue the Tipperary victory, or I won't overvalue Kilkenny's victory in Clare, because, you know, I just think of, let's say, Limerick when they came back after Ireland, they were getting beaten, you know, left, right, center in the leagues at times, and then still went on to win. So, like, I will be more judgmental of where every county's at, whether it be positive or negative, you know, in a month's time. And we say that every year in this podcast, Les. We can't, can't do rankings too fast.
You can't judge any team very quickly. Yeah, you can't judge any team very quickly from any result. And, like, particularly, invariably, most teams throughout this league, it happens every year, but we kind of supporters forget about it sometimes, that you'll just have that bolter of a kind of a result that just didn't go your way. And that can come down to a lot of things, because teams are still kind of during pre-season at the moment. They're still building. They're going to pick up injuries. They're trying players out. You turn up to a venue one of the days, could be your own venue, could be an away venue, and things just don't work out for you. No point in panicking. There's no point in pulling everything apart and you know, trying to figure out where it all went wrong in the post-mortem. It's just the case that these results will happen. So likewise, if you come out like Kilkenny with Clare the weekend, there's no point in getting too carried away with yourself. I know people are saying it's the first time, you know, going down tennis in, I think, a decade or so and winning. Yeah, important, but it doesn't define really anything. And likewise for Clare losing, again, you know, if you look at the team on paper, it was, you know, a lot less experienced than the Kilkenny team, etc. Same for Tipperary and Galway. You just, it's a standalone result. Have a look at it, park it, and take the positives, build on the negatives, and off you go.
Yeah. Before we move off this, Abtran 2010 on the YouTube last week. There's a league preview in Tipperary. Don't get a mention. What's going on here, lads? Less time on Scale and Murph's banter. More hurling chat, please. And then Deck Hardy 3093 said, it's getting like a buddy podcast. Get straight into the hurling. I think part of the idea last week was, look, we hate doing this thing. Who's going to win at the weekend? Team A are playing Team B. We want to have a bit of a, you know, we're back for the new season.
We hadn't spoken in 6 months in a podcast. We were trying to, how are you? How are you getting on? How's life? That was basically it, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, the two you lads, you're after getting 23 and a half minutes of Tipperary straight on the still chat there. So
you can't say we don't give the crowd what they want. Like, Will, you called it out there. Did we not speak last week at all about Tipperary?
I think we gave them about two lines. But I was very mindful last week that I didn't want to get into a match by match preview. I know that's not going to, some people won't like that. I think we barely touched Clare. Because again, it was a bit like, we know who they are. They're all Ireland champions. They're coming into this. We know they're going to be down a few players. Therefore, let's talk about some of the stories from the last few weeks, which is the idea for the vast majority of the pod. And then we'll kind of get into it once we have matches that we can actually review. There was also someone else asking as well, can we start doing more Division 2 and Division 3 hurling? And like, I had to be honest in the reply. I don't know if you guys were tagged in it, which is, it's a horrible cycle where it's very difficult for this. I'm sure we would love to give more promotion to hurling. further down the track, but we can't give an informed opinion on games that we haven't seen or that we're unable to see. And also, I guarantee you, those guys who are saying get straight to the hurling would be complaining if we weren't talking about Division 1A and the matches that were on TV at the weekend, because they're the games that people have seen and they can comment on what they've seen on League Sunday or on a live game on TG Car or RT. So it's a difficult one, but I do hope we're going to talk to Willie Maher in a few weeks' time. And maybe we can talk about how hurling can get coverage more generally. I'm very mindful at the moment, Skell, how long is left on the counting time bomb that is your battery?
1 hour and 27, 61%.
That's stabilised a little.
Healthy, that's healthy.
That'll go down fairly quick, lads.
I know.
But can I touch back on a question there, Will? So, yeah. Murph and I obviously have access to games. Well, not a lot of access at the moment because they're not on television, to Division 1A games and some 1B. How do we, discuss, review... dive into games that we can't see? Is there any way, genuine question, is there a way around this? Is there an app I'm missing? Is there like Kildare TV I'm missing?
Make friends with a stats team. That's about all the way you can do it, is and get them to send you on the video. Like, they're about the only people. Because I saw someone mentioning that, I think they were at the Westmeath Footballers at the weekend, where some big two-pointers kicked in the Gaelic football, and they were like, oh, it didn't make the TV coverage. And I was thinking that was probably Westmead or Loud stats team that had the camera there. So they'd be able to send it to you. But again, it's one of those things. It is very, very difficult to access. And maybe that brings us around nicely before we talk about the other games to hurling. Because I know, Murph, you were annoyed about this before even this Limerick and Cork saga began. That last week we ended up with just the one live game, which was the game between Tipperary and Galway. We deferred coverage in the TG Carr player for Clare against Kilkenny. So at least we could watch that online. But no hurling game on the Saturday for the first day. I can understand this when the football is of huge interest with the new rules. But then you saw the fixtures come out for this week. And up until this afternoon, there wasn't going to be a single live hurling game this weekend either. To me, that seems like hurling's getting a bad shaker.
Yeah, this is the thing. And like at the moment, we're very aware that the negotiations are ongoing between the GA, between RTE, about what the future of GA Go is. And like it looks like that the GA are looking to buy RTE out of their 50%. And, that's understandable. And we also understand that, I suppose, GA Go is trying to get to the place where it's fit for purpose. Like quite a few people have been saying that, well, it should be doing this and it should be doing that. And I think people are accepting that it's going to take time to get to that, but also kind of saying, well, it's up and running a few years now, so why isn't it that place it needs to be? But the other argument is like, the GAA have also said that it's not something they intend to do is to have all games televised because they want people more in the grounds. And I can understand, I'm sure there's a business plan from that point of view that, yeah, you want to get people into grounds. But surely there's an argument for getting games on telly as a kind of a blanket thing, because I'm looking at the likes of Clubber, and I've done a few bits with Clubber, openly say it, but Clubber had Harty Cup games on last week on a Monday, to say it's not achievable to get cameras to a game so that people can turn it on, buy your subscription to whatever it's going to be, to Clubber, to GAA Go, and you can watch it. Like if you look at Dublin and Antrim, a lot of people wanted to watch that, and that was in Croke Park, and there was nothing at that. Like, there was nowhere to watch that game. Cork and Wexford had potential to be a great game, as it turned out. We never know these things before the games, but it turned out that it was one-sided with Cork performing well. That's fine. You're going to have that. I understand that the weekend that was in it, it was, the new football rules, and people really wanted to see how they're going to be employed and how they're going to work out. But I don't think we should have to sacrifice the fact that nobody's asking for it to be on RTE2 every week, every Saturday night hurling match, every Sunday hurling match. But I'm surely think that now, because there's a space opened up where negotiations are ongoing, I don't see why we can't get to the stage of RTE say, well, we're going to take Limerick and Cork in Munster Championship. We're going to take these games. And so what? Let them take the big games or whatever way they want to do it and say, well, okay, these games are going to go to GAA Go, and that's fine. But then turn around and either to TG Cahir or to Clubber and say, well, what do you want to do with the rest of them? Because not everybody's going to buy a subscription to Clubber just to watch the rest of these games, but people want to do that. Like, people want to be able to watch the games. And I kind of find it amazing in some ways that I can probably easier watch a Harty Cup game online before I can watch, Cork and Wexford. That sounds a bit strange that we can do that. Yeah. And I think because, if you look at, I'm going to mention Clubber again, if you look at Clubber, they just provide coverage of it. They provide a commentator, they provide coverage, they provide a little bit of insight. And okay, it might be a huge audience that are going to look for a specific game, but you will have people really interested that want to watch it.
It doesn't need frills, though, Murph. It doesn't. Just be, no. Even a single camera setup would do.
Yeah, and it's just providing it for people. That's all it is. It's just providing the facility where someone can watch the match. And I think, like, you know, if the GAA have a plan where they're saying, okay, free to air, here you go, GAA Go here, and that provides for GAA Go being an appealing package. Happy days. But why not what's left over? If TG Carter wants to take a few games and if Clubber wants to take a few games, let them. And particularly Clubber, because that's where, you know, the vast majority of people are going to go then to say, well, look, my team maybe aren't, you know, if Kildare are playing whoever in hurling, it's not going to be on RTE, but at least I can watch it. If it's up the country, I can't make it up as far as Donegal, or I can't make it, you know, up as far as Roscommon or wherever. At least I can watch the game. And I think that's all what it just comes back to. And you know, it's healthy to have a conversation about this. I think nobody's being very unreasonable with asking this. But the main point then as well, and Will, as you were saying, to bring it back to, in fairness, like, a lot of the big games aren't being shown either. And that's the other conversation we have to have. Like, it's, you know, I saw what RTE said, and I saw what Cork CEO also said about whatever way the game came about on Saturday evening, that it's not being shown. That's fine. I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I can see what both sides are saying. As a standalone incident, I'm willing on that just to go, okay, that's fine. There was a bit of mix-up in communication here or whatever it was. But I still think the bigger picture has to be addressed, that there is more scope. I think there's someone there like Clubber that can take it on. Or GAA Go can be expanded to get more cameras to the games. As you said, Will, without frills, get a commentator there, get a camera. You don't have to provide a halftime entertainment. You don't have to provide anything, but just show the games.
Yeah, just before giving you a timeline on what's happened with the Cork Limerick saga, for anyone who might not be aware, Skell, your kind of general feeling on this, because I've even heard on previews last week and discussions, one of the jeopardies they were talking about going down to Division 1B is that you're out of sight, out of mind. This has actually been used as a reason not to get relegated, because you'd have to go and play in the weeds of Division 1B and not be seen on the TV. That's not the way this should be viewed, should it? The gods have stolen his 3G hotspot.
That's a big delay now. Is he gone? He's gone.
Am I back?
Oh, he's back. Here we go. Yeah, go on. Give us your thoughts on hurling on the telly there.
I got 50% of your question there, so I'm going to wing it. Right?
Go for it. No different to any other week, so go on.
No, I'm going to wing it. Yeah, no, I heard what you said. I'm only joking with you. It's a tricky proposition. I suppose I'm going back to the COVID time. And Jim, let's say, obviously, we had times whereby there was no matches at all. And then we got let's say, more games viewed because the club became first before the county. And that was kind of the start. I thought of something was going to be very, very good, very fruitful. Clubber came along, etc. The club games were all, a lot of them were getting televised, great. And I just think we've kind of lost some of that over the last couple of years with subscription service television. I hate to see it going that way in full. And this isn't a nice isolated instance whereby we only have Cork and Limerick this weekend. This has happened a few times. And even with fixtures, you know, for the Ireland quarterfinals, like 7 o'clock on Saturday evenings, etc., you know, it just feels like hurling has taken not even a back seat, but like a third, fourth seat to other sports. And I was disappointed to see the comment about Ireland and England. And I get that. There's a portion of our listeners too who are multi-sport fans. But like, if we're trying to promote the game, we've got to push it. We've got to push the game out, push the best matches out on top of people, you could say. And Cork and Limerick is obviously the top match of the weekend. So it's a tricky one. And for me, as a hurling supporter, I don't care about commentating. I don't care about, you know, production or what Clubber do, what TG Carter, what RT. I don't care. All I care about is if I can see the game and watch it and make my own determinations on, you know, the quality or whatever, great. You know, if I have that much, I'm actually happy. I don't need major background production. So I'm quietly content just to view the game. And if that means silence and I can't hear an awful lot, I can just see the game being played, I'm absolutely okay with that. And I understand people will probably want more of a production. They want the commentary, which might be viewed as a bare minimum. But for me, just show the games. And Murph is right. He's dead right. You can actually access Hearty Cup games, school games, college games faster, let's say, through YouTube, through Clubber, that you could with an inter-county senior game, which beggars belief, I'm sorry. You know, the top level of our game, and I can watch in UIG versus CIT easier than I can watch Corkfield Limerick. Makes no sense whatsoever, you know? Yeah. And let this not be a question of cost. We're talking about National League hurling games, Division 1A, you know, and Division 1B, and down on the grades too, where each weekend it doesn't cost an awful lot to put the game on some form or platform that people can watch. So,
yeah,
of course, if the honest endeavor was there and there was real, real intent from the top down, I mean this now, it would be done. It can be done. You know what I mean? But I just don't think it's there. I think everyone is just told, yeah, well, this is the situation. Put up or shut up.
But I think there's a kind of the time is right now also to trial something. Like for this year, for example, it feels like it's going to be internally within the GA. I could be wrong in saying that, but like let's say if GA buy RTE out of their side of the package, then GA get to turn around and say, okay, well, what way are we going to show these games? Negotiate with RTE and so on.
What do you mean buy them out?
So well, at the moment, they're 50-50. Yeah, they're 50-50.
I haven't heard talk of the buyout.
Yeah, so it seems like it's going to happen. This story kind of emerged about a month before Christmas, and the idea was that it's almost become messy when it comes to their next set of negotiations, that you're negotiating a deal with your broadcast partner next time around. And obviously they found themselves in front of the House of the Oireachtas, and there's been a whole load of, spotlight on the deal in the last year and a half. And Cork hurling fans probably chief among this, the amount of games that ended up on GAA Go, because GAA Go has to be profitable, and they felt showing Munster Championship games would actually sell subscriptions. So the feeling now is that we're meandering slowly towards a position where the GA will buy out the 50% stake, which is currently held by RTE, and the GA Go will then become its own entity. And then from that point, it'll kind of, I guess, stand up on its own two feet eventually. Mm. I wonder about, because at the moment they are based, their offices are based out at RTE in Montrose currently. So okay. I don't know how that's going to affect kind of the logistical side to it, and maybe some of the expertise that they have around broadcasting at the moment. But I'm sure all the details, that'll be ironed out along the way. Like this last week has been a really, really strange one, because for this podcast, I end up looking at the longer form fixtures quite a bit and going, right, what game is potentially going to be on here so that we can plan what we talk about a few weeks in advance. And when I saw that Limerick-Cork game was down for 7:30, and this is a long time ago when the draft fixtures came out, I just assumed, and I think Cork and Limerick were the same, game is going to be on TV. You didn't even think about it. It was like Saturday night, two of the semi-finalists from last year, two of the best games last season were played between these two teams. It almost seems like a complete no-brainer. If you're going to show any hurling game from Division 1A, this is the one you show, under the lights of Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Even before this kind of saga came out, around 20,000 tickets were sold. They reckon 30,000 people are going to go to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And that's even with the rugby game on between Ireland and England just before it as well. So there's huge appetite for it, both locally to go and watch it. Limerick supporters going down to watch it. And I would think the country would really want to see it. And then the way the week has panned out, so I don't want to give TG Carr a free pass in this, because TG Carr being seen as the white knight who have swooped in at the last moment on a Tuesday night and into a Wednesday morning and put this onto their player. TG Carr had the pick for the 7:30 throw-in, and they could have chose to show Limerick and Cork as opposed to Donegal against Dublin. Now, don't get me wrong, Jim McGuinness against Dublin, I'm sure there's a lot of Gaeltacht speakers in Donegal who will tune in to watch the game, and Dublin brings naturally just a large audience with it because of population as well. I can see why they were attracted to it. But Limerick-Cork was right there, ready to go. Mm. And then, according to Kevin O'Donovan, the CEO of Cork GAA, who's been speaking a bit over the last day or two about this, he said very informal talks took place with Bernard Smith, who's the games manager at the GAA. So he's organised around the fixtures. It was, lads, if you're willing to go to 6 o'clock, RTE are very interested in using that game as their slot. And Cork said, two big rugby towns, Limerick and Cork, don't particularly want to go up against them. Be messy for our supporters if we put it on at 6 o'clock. We're going to stay where we are. And that's how we ended up coming to this week. And then this last minute where people see the fixtures come out on Monday and go, what? Cork and Limerick isn't on the telly. And then people get a campaign online, and eventually it's going to be on the TG Carr player. But at some point, TG Carr opted not to show this game as well. So just in case we decide that TG Carr came in at the very last second, we should be very clear about the timeline around this. And like, I understand where Cork County Board are coming from too, where they're quite annoyed that a lot of the suggestions, and I saw this even under some of the tweets that I think the three of us may well have been tagged in, which was, Cork are trying to pull a stroke here. All they're doing is they're keeping the game off the TV so they can ensure they get the best possible ticket sales. They're trying to get the cost down. Did you see the story last week in the paper about servicing their debts? And all they want to do is get the best possible crowd in. Kevin O'Donovan was on OTB Breakfast earlier today, and he was really clear on this. He said that that's entirely false, that they wanted this game to be broadcast. They were surprised it wasn't broadcast in the first place. And he said the best possible scenario was that the streaming would be approved by the GA as it was ultimately today. So just in case people are thinking that Cork did try and pull a stroke or Limerick had some kind of impact in this, we contacted Limerick yesterday as well, and they said they were never consulted about a potential time change. So that discussion never took place. As far as they were concerned, they were going to Páirc Uí Chaoimh 7:30 this Saturday and are hurling the match. There was no talk about moving for an RTE slot or anything like that. But like, I'm glad in a way, Scale, that it found a solution that means that people will be able to watch it. I presume right to the reason they couldn't put it onto YouTube and why it has to be on the player and on the app, because that was the case with the deferred coverage of Kilkenny and Clare last week as well. But ultimately, if you have the means to go onto the website or you have the means to download the app, at least we can watch the game. Sometimes it's worth kicking up a fuss for this to happen.
Yeah, like you have to kick up the voice, but like any option is better than no option. So regardless of platform, and you can say, even if it goes behind a pay, like to a degree to a paywall, I won't go that far, But any platform where it can be accessed through minimal effort, I think, is a positive. Where I would have a grievance is if there was no platform whatsoever, no camera, and you were depending on, you know, deferred coverage. And for me, deferred coverage is the same. There's something about live sport, obviously watching it live, yeah, checking phones, etc. Keeping up with it as the match happens is far better. You know, the entertainment value is far superior to that than watching it deferred or having to pick it up on the phone. So I'm content. I won't say I'm happy. I'm content that there's a platform on which the game can be seen. But I just think there's grander improvements that we have to make across the board. And it just feels to me like always is hurling and suffering. You know, I never get the feeling that football is suffering. I always feel that hurling is always suffering, and it always contains big counties. So it defies logic. It doesn't make sense. And maybe I'm being a bit pig-headed because I'm a hurling, you know, what to say, hurling snob. But like, if we're going to grow the game, as I always, the phrase I use, we have to push it out there, you know, and put it into the kitchens and sitting rooms of most households. So I just think greater work has to be done, much greater work. And hopefully Willie Maher, when he comes on, we can chat about his plan. And part of it is obviously grow and develop to grassroots level for players, etc. But how do we get access, exposure? How do we get it, as I said, into the sitting rooms and kitchens of more children in areas like Dublin who have huge populations, Cork City, Galway City, etc., to grow the game from the inside out?
Yeah, like Willie Maher said a few weeks ago in some of his first interviews that it's not one size fits all. So he was saying that, you know, when he goes to areas where hurling is not established at the moment or where the priority is to maybe just get a club up and running and maybe it's about young kids just picking up a hurl and getting access to play the game, it's very different when you go to that tier of teams below, say, the bottom 7 or 8 where you're trying to develop the game. And at the moment, they're just kind of crying out to get a chance to go to the next level. Like, I think one of the positives on this is that the BBC are streaming 2 of Antrim's matches, starting with Antrim against Westmeath this coming Sunday in Corrigan Park, and they're going to show that. The only crap part is if you're from Westmeath, unless you're very good with VPNs, you're not going to be able to watch the BBC iPlayer. It's a pity that it's on that platform, but again, it's better than nothing when it comes to 1B. 1B really feels like it plays out behind closed doors. Like, I was lucky enough to be able to go to one of the games, I might talk a little bit later on, in person, but if not, options to watch that game were completely zero, unless some guy was streaming it from the stand with his phone, where he was totally going to get banned from Twitter for doing so. But there's no other option to watch it, so... We shall see. I'm not sure if lessons have necessarily been learned here, but I would worry for hurling further down the track, because there's very few, unless they get moved, 6 o'clock games on a Saturday that I see for the National Hurling League. We do have an exclusive hurling weekend, which is coming up, where I'm sure there's going to be 1 or 2 live games on the weekend of the 8th and 9th of February. But then until the next break where it's just hurling, you could be watching a lot of football. And again, I think people want to watch the new rules and all that, but hurling could easily be forgotten about. Like, the only one thing about this, Murph, I was talking to Podge Collins, not the calf, the former hurler, on Off the Ball last night. I haven't been granted a meeting with the stripper cow just yet. But Podge was saying last night that one of the things about the Hurling League is that there is an issue whereby you're going from a league format into another round robin league when it comes to the championship. So it's kind of understandable that maybe the broadcasters want to keep their powder dry and not show a huge amount before probably showing Galway, Kilkenny and Leinster, maybe one of the Dublin games in Leinster, and quite a bit of the Munster championship.
Yeah, it's a fair point. But I mean, the football championship follows a kind of similar pattern as well. Like, I mean, but there's a lot of football games. Like, I wouldn't be fully familiar now with the football structure now in terms of the ins and outs of it, but it's not a case that you know, football is exciting now and then exciting exactly when it happens in the championship as well. Like, I mean, there is games that are going to be dead rubbers as well. I understand what Podge is saying as well, that it's a very similar format, but we've seen great games in both formats as well. Like, you know, so it's a case that you don't know what the game is going to transpire to be before you play it. You're just going to have to forecast that, look, we'll put on 1 or 2 games, we'll select ones that I think will be good. Like, the big epitome of that last year was Cork and Limerick, one of the greatest games probably ever played down in Páirc Uíomh, was not televised. It was on GAA Go, was not televised, and it got to the extent where the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach were weighing in. I know it was a bit of populist politics. They were jumping.
There's no doubt.
But that's to the extent that these things can go. Like, you kind of just have to weigh off and look at the game, particularly, let's say, Cork and Limerick at the weekend. There's a fair chance that's going to be a good game because of the rivalry, because both teams have been so competitive over the last few years. Would the same logic be played to football? No, like, there's football games that are also played there that aren't exciting to watch on telly. So, like, I don't really buy that side of the argument. I appreciate what Podge is saying, but I think it still comes back to the reasoning that we have to get these games into people's houses. If we're talking about growing the game, like I think I saw a stat lately that 7% hurling is played by like 7% of children in Ireland, and like basketball is played by 6%. It's something to that ratio anyway. So if we're talking, the hurling's actually at 7%, you know, it's the national sport, but it's at 7%. The first thing you'd be thinking is, okay, how do we get this out to more people and how do we grow the sport? Like the All-Ireland was one of the greatest advertisements for the game last year. Mm. The Cork Limerick game, we were talking about it for a week, for 10 days after it. It was unbelievable. It was re-shown several times. Yeah, you can't grow the game unless you put the game out there. So for me, that's the foremost thing first. You know, we need to be able to out there. And again, it's also for the fans that just want to watch games, who love watching hurling. Do we have the ability to show these games? Yes, we do. Why aren't we showing them? It still just comes back to that. And I appreciate they may not be appealing to RT. That's fine. That's okay. But that shouldn't be the hurdle to which people just still can't watch the game, even if they just want to watch it.
You know, maybe GA Go is the special sauce when it comes to some of these big games. So you just listed a few of them off there. So
yeah,
Cork and Limerick, Cork and Clare, Clare and Limerick in recent years. These were all the games that really annoyed people that they weren't on. I think like the one that really sparked it was the one where Clare ended Limerick's long championship run. Yeah. And everyone would have tuned in. If that was on TV and people heard that there's a thriller playing out between Clare and Limerick, even if you just heard the score,
yeah,
you'd
switch on.
Definitely flick the channel. You went, oh, a few minutes to go, are Clare going to hold on? Instead, it was online, and then people were going, ah, there'll surely be a highlights program. No highlights program.
Yeah.
And I think what would have happened this weekend, if that TG Carr intervention hadn't happened late in the day, we would have had to wait till League Sunday to see what happened, you know, in video form in that game, which seems crazy in the year of our Lord 2025, but here we are. Again, I'm very mindful of where the power might be on the laptop. So let us move on from the TV debate. What's left there now, Scal?
In my patience level or the battery?
Maybe both. I there's still part of me that's kind of hopeful that one of these engineers who've come across from Europe is going to just storm through your door now in a second and turn the light on and go, huzzah, you have power again.
I'm just worried about water for kettle, really, if I'm honest.
Fair enough. It's a real life issue.
It is, yeah. The pod feels a bit on the
back. Yeah, I've 31%, William.
And what's that in minute form?
Minute form is 36 minutes.
Oh, wow. Great. So we've got about 7 or 8 minutes left with you, so. The other games that took place on the weekend. There's probably not a huge amount to say about the game on Saturday, which was that Cork very strong win against Wexford. Straight away, people are thinking Wexford are in huge trouble, which I think when you look down and see where they're at this stage, Wexford, with the players that are missing currently, I think it's only 5 players from the 2019 Leinster final are still around. I was reading one of the reports, so Mark Fanning, Simon Donoghue, Carl Dunbar, Rory O'Connor, who was their captain that was sent off along with Declan Dalton, and Kevin Foley were the only starters. So Keith Ross are dealing without Dee O'Keefe, Matthew Hanlon, Liam McGovern, who've all retired. Apparently, Lee Chin, the rumour is that he's now joining a club in Sydney, which could indicate maybe he's going to be away a bit longer than they thought. Jack O'Connor's injured, Damien Reck is injured, Conor McDonald is injured, and Liam Ryan is injured. So that is the spine of that.
It begs the question, are Wexford going to come out of Leinster?
Oh.
Murph, that's a question for you, bud.
Go on, Murph, you can answer that. I would think
like a throw in that hot potato there.
I think the hot potato was fine because I think they look vulnerable. I think if you were a Dublin, Offaly or Antrim fan right now, you'd be thinking that Wexford, if these players are all unavailable or maybe not fully fit for Leinster, that they can possibly get at them. What do you think, Murph?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable to assume that. Like, I mean, they're missing a lot of players and you can't expect a lot of new players, inexperienced players, to pull this out of the fire. Like, let's say if we're talking here in 10 or 12 weeks' time and that's still Wexford's situation, it's perfectly reasonable to think that they're not going to come out. Also, then, if you look across then at Dublin, like, Dublin, a great performance the other night, missing, you know, Sutcliffe, missing the Nafina lads, they're missing a heap of lads, and they performed really well. So let's say, likewise, these are two standalone games. If you look at Dublin, you go, yeah, if Dublin build on that, they're going to cause, let's say, Kilkenny and Galway big problems when it comes to the championship if they keep building on their performance. But there's a big if. There's an unknown thing here. Wexford may get a few of those players back on the field. Then we're in better position to judge them. If Lee Chin stays away longer, automatically they become a weaker force if Lee Chin isn't there. And that's the same as if, you know, you take Conor McDonald or you take Colin Whelan out of Galway. Automatically Galway become a weaker force. You know, you take Owen Cody out of Kilkenny, they become a weaker force. So it's reasonable to assume these things. If they don't get the injury sorted, it's going to be tough for them to come out. And if Dublin, particularly Dublin, if they keep building the way they look like they're building, they could be in for a really good summer and really cause teams a lot of problems. So at the moment, the early indicators would be, you know, you'd be looking at your Dublin, Galway, Kilkenny, that sort of direction, you know.
It's grim for Wexford. They're kind of strong favourites now for relegation from Division 1A after that defeat. Just the 5 points in play during the game. Keane Byrne, all of his 7 points came from frees. They were 1-12 to 5 points down by half-time. And then Cork just kind of put on the afterburners a little bit after half-time. Declan Dalton scores the second goal. First goal scored by Pádraig Power. And next thing it feels like, right, this game is just is going to run away from Wexford. And ultimately it did, 221 to 12 points. The thing is, Gail, how big a loss is Declan Dalton going to be? Because if we think back to the game last year in the semi-final, Dalton had a very specific role, which is to go over and make things difficult for Kyle Hayes. Now, unless he gets this overturned, and when you saw the scuffle on the highlights on League Sunday and the kind of hook that comes around with himself and Rory O'Connor, I think it's unlikely he gets this overturned. But then I thought Lewis Skelly probably wasn't going to get his overturned for Arsenal, so you never know between now and the weekend. But if we assume that Dalton is missing, how big of a loss is he for their half-forward line on Saturday?
He didn't want to answer that question, Will.
No, he's been sent off as well. And he's gone.
Oh, he's fully gone.
Yeah. Right. So I was attempting to ask about how much of a loss Declan Dalton is going to be. Not sure how that's going to work in the audio pod, but for the video, I'm probably going to have to put a swoosh or something in there where it comes back to two of us sitting here. And the reason why is that we got our answer about how long the laptop was going to last. It was not 39 minutes from the point that we started moving to the other games across the weekend. It was, in fact, 56 minutes is how long the laptop would last. We did bring Skell back on very briefly. He was on his phone. But I think we may well have emptied his data, so I hope he has nothing important to do before the power comes back on that. And he couldn't hear us, so he then sent us a message. It was very short. Game over.
Yeah, gone.
That's it. Gonski. Yeah. So, we'll talk about the other games, Murph. Declan Dalton, then, as I was trying to bring Scale in on this, he's probably going to be suspended. I think it's very unlikely those red cards get overturned between now and the weekend. Last year, he did a really good job on Kyle Hayes. He was there as a disruptor over that side.
Yeah.
How big of a loss will he potentially be if he's not available for the weekend?
Look, there's no doubt he'll be a big loss. Seeing Dalton even in the game in Páirc-Uí last year and seeing him in the All-Ireland semi-final, like he's a great big day player. Like, he really gets up for these games. He's played particularly well against Limerick over the last few years as well. He's a player with a great amount of flair as well. You know, from open play, he's capable of getting really good scores. He's been a really reliable free taker, particularly from longer distances when Pádraig Horgan's kind of taken the, let's say, 65 inwards and so on. And I think something that I really like about Dalton as well is that he gets amongst other teams, like, you know, and again, particularly Limerick, gets involved, you know, gets kind of under their skin as well. He likes just to, you know, to be right up in their face. And that's something that, you know, Cork will want to have in spades against Limerick at the weekend. It's not do or die for either team. Of course it's not. But there's bragging rights at stake. There's a little bit of, you know, what's coming down the line for both teams. If Cork were able to rattle Limerick again at the weekend, you know, that's a few times after doing it to Limerick over the last few years, over the last 12 months alone. And looking down the line of championship, it's only another string to Cork's bow if they go and beat them, you know, facing into championship. So without Declan Dalton, it does become a harder task. But in fairness, the one thing we've seen with Cork over the last 2 years in particular is they've blooded a few players. They do have a strong bench. They do have players to come in there as well. So, okay, he's a loss, but it's not as big a loss as other teams would have if one of their main players is gone. Cork do have forwards to come in and perform in that situation. And, you know, Cork will be saying to their players, you know, this is an opportunity for lads to come in and maybe grab a jersey for the rest of the league potentially, or show us what you're capable of against Limerick. So, look, there's no doubt. I don't think he'll get back. He will be a loss, but I'm sure Cork would be happy to be absent without him for this game, as long as he's not absent for a future game against Limerick, potentially, because he is a match winner. Like, I mean, some of the scores he got in the semi-final last year really propelled Cork to beating Limerick in the semi-final. There's no two ways about it. So, look, his presence alone will serve to weaken Cork's attack to a certain extent. But they have players to come in, I'm sure, of no doubt. And look, to be honest, if I was a Cork player playing Limerick this weekend, if you're not up for it, there's nearly something wrong with you. So, look, it'll be a loss, certainly. But I'm sure Cork will have the lads to come in and replace him.
Yeah, so Connolly is hurling tonight in the Fitzgibbon, the last group game. So again, I don't know if they're going to use him. They start with 9 of the starters in the All-Ireland final. So Pat Ryan still had a very strong panel for that game against Wexford. And maybe he just kind of chops and changes and rotates a few in for the Limerick game and they see where they're at, because they have that win now in the bank. And they obviously go and have a right good cut at Limerick this weekend, I think. Limerick had a challenge game. So themselves and Waterford had the bye week to start. So almost an ideal fixture for the two teams to face off last Sunday. One of the things that stood out, the aforementioned Kyle Hayes went in at 6. Now, I'm not sure, because we talked obviously about Declan Hannan and where his role is going to be, and now he's no longer captain. Like, I wonder, will Hayes eventually find himself at 6 at some point? Or do you lose something maybe not having his freedom, Murph, going up and down the wing?
Yep. You'd have to say, like, they would be losing. Like, wing backs have more freedom to go forward than centre backs, particularly at inter-county level. So there is potential there, but he's an outstanding defender as well. And like, we've seen Will O'Donoghue deployed at 6 as well. Obviously, Declan Hannan has been, you know, the stalwart for them at 6 over the last few years. I wouldn't be surprised to see a few different players throughout the league at 6. I think it's something that John Kiely's saying, I have a lot of players capable of playing there, but who is the best fit? And I'm sure he doesn't want to be robbing Peter to pay Paul. Let's say you take Kyle Hayes in off 7, you play him in at centre back. Does the effect of losing him at the wing, does that outweigh playing him at 6? Or like what? The only way to find these things out is by deploying them there at 6 and see what way it works. I think you're going to see a variety of players at 6 throughout the league. And I think John Kiely will just be... And I think you're going to see a lot of players moved around in general for Limerick, because realistically, they're looking at this to say, look, we'll blood a few players, we'll try lads in different positions, we'll see, you know, is there anything there that we take from it that we could possibly deploy in championship? And I just see Kyle Hayes playing at 6 as one of those. I think they will lose something. I'd rather a Kyle Hayes if I had him with the freedom to go up the line. But we might see another side to his play that he's dominant at 6. So it'll tell a lot. We'll see a bit of the weekend, see what he's like. But I think come championship, if Kyle Hayes is fitting well, I still expect to see him at number 7. That's just where we've seen him really at his most dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. And I think as well, last year we were looking at the Colin O'Neill experiment when Declan Hannan wasn't available early in the league. And as you say, Will O'Donoghue had finished out a season very successfully, standing back in at 6 and I guess fulfilling the Hannan-style role as well. So they like to have players who can be versatile and who can slot into different positions. That's been the case. Like, even Paul O'Neill just hasn't quite found his position within that team yet. Difficult when you're up against so many All-Stars and guys who've won so many All-Irelands that you're thinking he can probably play anywhere from half-back to half-forward. He'd be very comfortable in midfield. But yet you're up against all of these quality players trying to get a place. And I'm sure one of the things that John Kiely looks at is, well, actually, this guy's versatility is a huge thing for us within the panel, but maybe they've not quite found the slot for him to find his way into the team. And then you look at someone like De Bull, who is more direct and has a very defined position in the full forward line. It's maybe easier to try and find your role when that's the way that you're kind of perceived. But we'll see how Limerick go. Like, your expectations for Limerick generally, do they go at the start of the year hard this time around? Because we praise them so often for knowing when to peak and finding their way into a year. But this is the first time now, obviously, in a while where they haven't been to an All-Ireland final, and I'm sure they're smarting after that. Is there a change of approach, or are we going to see something similar from Limerick again?
I think we'll see something similar from Limerick again. At the end of the day, their tactic of building into the season over the last few years nearly won them a 5 in a row. It's completely understandable because they have it under their belt. Like, they have the experience under their belt. They've been tested so much that they don't really have to find out a whole lot about themselves to know what way to approach championship. Or other teams, let's say the likes of Galway, for example, who have a lot more new players in, they've had a change in management, there's a lot more changes happened there. There's a lot more for them to find out during the league than there is for Limerick. So, what has changed about Limerick over the last years? Nothing really. The management is there, the backroom team is there, many of the same players, one or two players stepping away. They're still the same well-oiled machine. And at the end of the day, we're just beaten in the All-Ireland semi-final by a really outstanding performance by Cork. So I still think the tried and trusted technique of building your way in, giving your opportunity to a few players, surrounded by a spine of a team that is experienced and has been there and won several All-Irelands, that'll just be the technique. And don't be surprised to see Limerick maybe lose one or two matches in the league, because this has been the case for Limerick over the last few years where they've come into a league, you know, we've had Galway beat them, we've had different teams beat them in the league, But when it comes to championship, that's where they are building up pace for, and we're a long way away yet. So I expect Limerick to stick to form that they've had over the last few years, try a few players during the league and just keep building back into it. And again, let's say if we're talking here now next week, after in the aftermath of this game and Cork have won, it's not the same effect as Cork beating them in the early stages of the Munster Championship. It's not the same thing. Very much both sides are feeling out their own teams at the moment, never mind each other. So I just still think I can just see Limerick building into it with those experienced players. Like Tom Morrissey still isn't even back at this stage. Like they've given him a chance to go off there and, you know, do his bit of travelling. A lad who's very experienced and you know what you're going to get out of him come championship. So I think that is even an indication if you see how Limerick are approaching it, that they're allowing their players, listen, we're not at the business end of it yet. We want to try a few lads out. But as we get closer to that stage, you know, it's all hands on deck. So yeah, like you're asking me, like, I just think we're going to see the same from them, from their approach to this year as we have other years.
Well, look what has just happened.
He's not back, is he?
Someone's appeared in the waiting room.
No.
Let's see what happens here. I'm not even going to edit this out. So we're just going to see where this goes.
From darkness into light, don't you call it?
Yeah. I mean, back with a mild delay, but you are there. Let's see how this goes. I'll just have to ask a question and leave a gap and see where we go here. Skella, how do you see Cork and Limerick going on Saturday?
Repeat that question again with a half it.
How do you see Cork and Limerick going this weekend?
Oh, good. Well, Cork were very impressive in their first outing. But I'm very intrigued to see Limerick. I suppose we touched on it last week, and I know I got a bit of flack about it, about the absence of Nicky Quaid and how they're going to perform. I suppose John Kelly and his team are, you know, I want to see, are they going to introduce new players? Because if you remember last year, some of the guys started breaking down with injuries, particularly full back line. John Sean Finn, Mike Casey, these, et cetera, Peter Casey as well up top. So who's going to be the next man to step up? But really what I'm looking at is how Limerick survived without Nicky. And I'm putting probably a bit too much value, maybe. I'm guilty of that with goalkeeper bias, but that's probably the biggest thing I'm looking at. And Cork, having a game under their belt, look very sharp. I know we touched on it with Wexford being a week inside with an awful lot of absentees and retirements, etc. But in the same breath, they served up two crackers last year. I backed Limerick twice last year to beat Cork. That didn't happen twice. So I'm not going to go against Cork this year, but I'm hoping for a good game.
Okay. There we go. That actually held up reasonably well. So I think we might actually be okay here. We'll see now whether his face moves on the delay in a second, and that might determine an awful lot. But he got the answer out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'll have a quick look at just what happened elsewhere. You keep an eye on Skell there in the background. So as Murph mentioned earlier on, Dublin opening up with a very impressive win against Antrim at Croke Park. Conor Loughran scoring one goal and 3 points. Keane O'Sullivan, 13 points, 11 from frees. It tells a story really for Antrim that 10 points of their 14 came from the stick of James McNaughton, and only 5 points of their entire total came from play during the game. So a lot of work for Antrim ahead of that game against Westmeath, which feels important towards the bottom of the table, even on weekend two. Westmeath didn't have a game last week because their match against Laois wasn't played in Division 1B.
Oh, yeah.
So that didn't really work out all that well. The game that I didn't mean to bury in any way, Murph, was Kilkenny's win against Clare. I know you said earlier on, 7 in a row games in the league and 10 years doesn't really all that matter that much when it comes to the league. But surely this is a very pleasing win, given the teams were level 7 different occasions, including on the 70th minute, and Kilkenny found themselves a couple of points at the end of the game to win it.
Yeah, what I was really happy with Kilkenny was that, and I think Derek even touched on it after the game, Clare started really well. Like David Reedy was on fire for the first few minutes, really electric. Clare just had great structure about their play. Kilkenny just took a while for them to get into the game. But when they got into it, you know, whether it was 6 points to one, 7 points to two, there was a bit of a distance there. They just bridged the gap and bridged it nicely just all the way up to half time. And it was just those few experienced players like Mikey Carey, 3 points in the first half from right half back, you know, outstanding really. Like Mossy Keown was the man of the match. David Blanchfield was brilliant at centre back. And like really for Clare, you know, when McInerney went off as well, that was a big loss to him as well. You know, one the more experienced player. And you have to say as well, on paper, Kilkenny had a bit of a stronger team. I mean that by experience out compared to Clare. Clare were trying a few more players. But the one thing I was saying to myself to hold it true, I was like, both sides will be really happy with this game. You know, if Kilkenny came away from this game and they'd lost it, I would still be saying, geez, great run out for Kilkenny though, because the game was played in a really good spirit. It was played at a really good tempo. Either side could have won it. And the 2 points are definitely appreciated from a Kilkenny point of view. But also just really happy with, you know, Garrod Dunn came on full forward, made a few balls stick, and which was really important at that time of the game, you know, set up Owen Cody for a score. Luke Hogan came on as well. So from a Kilkenny point of view, I was really happy with how they finished out the game that way and got the win. But Clare were really strong, performed really well. They'll certainly have a few areas where they look at and say, well, not to say we let Kilkenny back into it for the second 15 minutes of the second half, but they'll certainly look and say maybe our performance dipped, maybe our the tempo we were playing at dropped as well, and they'll look at a few things there. But by no means was there massive negatives on the Clare side. Again, they're a team that's building off the back of an All-Ireland final. They were missing a few players as well. But the main thing I'd say from this, yeah, happy with the Kilkenny win. But I think both sides are really happy with this game. Like I said, plenty of hitting in it, plenty of fighting for a really tough ball, and plenty of good scores in it as well. So look, I think both sides going away will be saying, listen, that game will definitely stand to us coming down the line. Because neither side really played... Clare didn't play bad. Even though Kilkenny won, Clare performed really well and realistically could have won the game very easily as well.
The only bad thing, Skell, that came out of the game for Clare, like I'd agree that I think the performance was good and their performance early in the game was especially good, was that they lost two more defenders to injury. So Conor Lean and David McInerney went off. I don't know how long they're going to be out for, and they've got the break week here. But when you include the amount of injured players they have, Shane O'Donnell not coming back to later on in the league as well. We saw Tony Kelly sitting in the stand watching the game too. He knows how to manage his own minutes as well. You don't want to be losing two key defenders heading into the next run of games here.
No, you don't. I think from any, even from, you know, from a supporter's perspective, like it was what, the 26th of January, Munster Championship was started in the latter stages of May. There's no real cause for concern, depending on the severity of injury. If it's a muscle injury or something minor, they'll be back and have games under the belt before championship kicks off. You know, I don't think the injuries are deemed to be too serious. So, like, again, there's no crisis ringing. And with regard to Shane O'Donnell, I wouldn't exactly call him an absentee. Like, he seems to kind of roll his way into the championship, if you like, the same as Tony Kelly. And did the same thing last year, and look what happened. So there's no cause for concern whatsoever. And like that now, Clare, they built a good squad during last year's league campaign while certain players were absent. And it made them, I suppose, stronger. And we saw what substitutes did in the Ireland final last year, especially in extra time. So, again, no cause for concern. I did have a question for Murph, actually. I'd be kind of wrecking my head over Kilkenny sometimes. What's the, you know, for you as a Kilkenny man, right, and not taking your pride out of it, say, what's the realistic goal? What's this Kilkenny team, what are you hoping they achieve this year? I have a viewpoint from yourself. Like, what do you think?
Well, realistically, Kilkenny will be looking to win the Leinster final and then be in an All-Ireland final. Like, if Kilkenny don't win an All-Ireland final, not to say it's acceptable, but they're not the top team at the moment in the country. If we're scraping teams at the moment, Kilkenny are third or fourth, probably fourth. You know, you have to give Limerick the benefit of the doubt there in that, you know, they were beaten by the All-Ireland champions in the semi-final. So Kilkenny will say, look, we're probably in fourth at the moment. They'll have a healthy view of that.
Are you going Limerick Cork Clare? Or Clare, Limerick, Cork. Sorry.
Bro, I'd be going...
Those top three regardless.
Yeah. Those. Like, I just have to give credit to, you know, Clare and Cork 1 and 2, Limerick 3, and then Kilkenny 4. And I think Kilkenny would be looking at it going, okay, you know, we're after watching Conor Fogarty, Killian Buckley, these lads, Walter Welsh, leave the dressing room now. We've young players coming in. They've been there for a few years, but they've gotten a bit of game time as well. If Kilkenny win Leinster and get to an All-Ireland final, and after that, then, let's say, if they go and win a Leinster final or All-Ireland final, brilliant. But I don't think Derek Ling is in the dressing room saying to lads, look, lads, this is where we're going to go. He'll be saying, lads, we're here to win in All-Ireland. And aiming short of that wouldn't be tolerated, really, by the likes of, you know, Derek Ling and Michael Rice and these lads. They just won't tolerate that kind of attitude. So they'll be aiming for that. But if we're standing here at the end of the year and Kilkenny have gotten to an All-Ireland final and won Leinster, but just fallen short in All-Ireland final, I'll say, well, that's a good step for this team, because not a lot of these lads will be stepping aside over the next few years. You know, you might have your TJ or whatever stepping aside, but the core bulk of this team are a young team. So I think at the moment, that's where, you know, the barometer is to say, well, if we did that this year, that's a good step, you know. And I think that's probably fair to say. I think, you know, like Kilkenny, we've seen it. They've been in Leinster, or they've been in All-Ireland semi-finals and All-Ireland finals over the last few years. So, like, getting to an All-Ireland semi-final isn't cutting the mustard for Kilkenny, for this team. Derek will want to go the step further and be into an All-Ireland final.
What was your expectation, Skell, if you said you had an idea of what you think they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I was agreeing with Murph because I was starting off with where I thought Galway would be a really successful year. And I said last year about Dublin, them coming out of Leinster would be a good year and get to a quarterfinal. Galway, we haven't won a Leinster in 6 years. I think 2018 was the last time we won one. So for us, I'm not even talking about All-Ireland series. I'm not talking about semifinals. If we can win a Leinster while we're in the middle of a perceived rebuild, that'd be hugely successful from our perspective. I don't think, I think survival in the league is going to be tough, if I'm honest. I know it's two up, two down. That's going to be tricky to be not one of the two down. You're depending on teams to probably put results your way, if you like. So I think, to summarize, league survival and Leinster title will be a good year. I won't talk about Ireland's. There's no point being just pig-headed here and say and being succumbed to your arrogance, saying, oh yeah, we'll be in the semi-finals or finals. Mm. Not there yet. You know what I mean? With the teams we had the last couple of years, we didn't get to Ireland finals, so I'm not going to make that statement. Then I was basically Kinney above that. I think the Leinster final, winning one of them is the least, you know, that county, that team would expect. And then to re-win a semi-final, a challenge for a final. Would they win a final? I don't know. Long way to go to get there, but I think they want to get themselves back into semi-final and challenge to get back into a final. And that, then, to me, would be a relatively successful year whilst trying to blood some new players as well. Because I had questions over some of the lads. I don't know some of these players. You know, like Luke Conlon, Zach Bayhammond, these guys, Luke Hogan, Gareth Dunn. You know, I had a question over Mossy Keown. You know, I'm a big fan of him. John Donnelly kind of came of age last year. Can Mossy Keown do the same thing this year? Then next year, because you always seem to be chopping and changing with the sixth forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sixth forward is always getting changed. You have a solid five there, so can Mossy Keown be that kind of real nailed on sixth? And see, if you're not improving with new players, how do I expect you to challenge further when you're coming up against teams who have new and improved players? That's the question I was asking myself. So these lads I'm naming out, who's like, we spoke with Billy Drennan a couple of years ago, but to me, he just looks like this sounds very bad. That came out wrong. He's a dead ball specialist, but I'm not getting the same thing from playoff him. You know what I mean? So like Zach Bayhammond, Luke. Anyone new, Murph, that you could say, right, this guy, watch out for this kid or this person?
Well, like Peter MacDonald at the weekend, for example, he played at midfield, plays for Thomastown, scored 2 points. And it was very competitive against Clare at the weekend. But the likes of him, if he plays in midfield, where we've seen the likes of Adrian Mullen, he captained at the weekend, in the absence of John Donnelly. And let's say if he plays and starts to perform at midfield and performs a very functional role there in terms of like your Will O'Donoghue type role or someone where you're getting involved, winning ball, which he was doing a lot of at the weekend. We've seen Adrian Mullen deployed at midfield over the last few years, kind of hoping to do that role, be the link man between. But this allows to push Adrian Mullen up, for example. So there's plenty of players there. Like you mentioned, Zach Bayhammond, another Thomastown player who won the county final this year. Like, you know, you talk of, let's say, fit lads within the Kilkenny team. This lad is an absolute machine. Like, his fitness is absolutely incredible. But can Derek Ling find a function for that is the next thing. And, even people are talking about McCassey as well at the weekend. Functionality is going to come into it as well in terms of how do you convert this fitness, this skill and so on. How do you fit among the team and how does that have a ripple effect up the field? And I think for Kilkenny, if they find the likes of, let's say, Peter MacDonald goes really well at midfield this year and that allows Adrian Mullen to go back into the forwards or, you know, as in, be a resident in the forwards as opposed to dropping them out to midfield. Well, that gives you a bit of a threat further up the field. But it's too early, really, to see yet what way Derek is intending dropping these lads in.
A question I've raised before, who's your six?
Well, at the moment, David Blanchfield had a mighty game the other day. Huge man. And what I really liked about him, he sold about 5 dummies the other day. Got the ball, had a look up, nothing on, let on he was going to strike it, took the touch and carried it out about 10 yards and then provided a ball. Really just kind of classy, controlled play there. I think if David Blanchfield keeps performing like that, I think he starts nailing down the sixth position and then you start to see Mikey Carey and Richie Reid and the boys start fighting for the wing-back positions. And I think that's maybe what's going to happen. And I think Derek probably maybe wants that. Blanchfield's 6'5". He's a huge presence. He covers ground and he's a very good defender. That's all the boxes you're looking for your six.
And he goes so forward.
He's a very healthy player going forward in terms of he doesn't lose the plot going up. He goes up, has a look around, pops the ball, but can also score, you know. Scored a point last year against Clare in the semi-final as well. So there's options there, and maybe Derek is looking at, well, let's see how we set up with Blanche at centre-back.
Yeah,
there's fuel for Richie Reid there.
Yeah. Oh, but look, it's realistic, and it's something Richie Reid would have looked at the game the weekend, been there the last few years. really capable hurler. But we've seen Richie Reid played midfield the last on and off over the last few years as well. So like Richie will look at that and he'll be the first lad to know David Blanchfield had a great game at centre back this weekend. But there's no point in saying, you know, you hope to get to an All-Ireland final and compete if you don't have competition for places. And at the moment, I was looking going, that's brilliant. That's great competition there. If you only have 15 players who aren't competing for positions and, like, you know, the 16 on aren't competing, it's no good. You're not going to win anything that way. So for me, looking at Blanche Hurlwell and going, we still have Richie Reid to come back here and we still have the... Brilliant. That's what you want. You know, you want that competition.
Just one other question before we finish the main pod. We can talk about the games of the weekend on the members pod. Kilkenny change in shape a little bit as well, Murph, to suit the conditions in a way where they had to kind of work the ball through the lines a little bit. We had seen Kilkenny kind of evolving this way, if that's a fair way of putting it. It's not a revolution, it's definitely an evolution of how they play. But when they dropped their half forward line back a little bit and decided not to be as direct, we actually maybe got to see a bit of an insight of what Kilkenny could look like as this develops, where they actually moved the ball really well at the weekend.
Yeah, that's it. And it's there's quite a few things in hurling that you just can't do overnight. And let's say, Scahill, you were talking about Galway there, saying, look, over the last years, haven't won the Leinster final, and you're not expecting them this year to go and suddenly turn it on and win an All-Ireland final just because Micheál Donoghue is back or whatever. There's things that take, a bit of time. And I would say Kilkenny club hurling and Kilkenny hurling in general, you know, we were a little bit later to the party in terms of adjusting how our style of hurling to come around to the modern game, that you just can't be lumping balls down. You have to be adaptable. You have to be able to play it both ways. Yeah, go long when you need to go long, but be able to carry that ball through the lines and draw out the other team, so that creates the space inside and allows Owen Cody to be one-on-one and allows, you know, whoever to be one-on-one inside. And in tough conditions the other day, we saw them function really well. You know, we saw them well able to do that. And part of the reason is that, you know, that 5 to 12 area, you had all really good ball carriers, tidy players that could control the ball within the area. You know, Paddy Deegan was deployed at wing forward, but he's still involved in that middle third area where all that business is done of the short play. But I refer back to David Blanchfield. He was very controlled at centre back and kind of facilitated that use of good ball. We saw a lot of times where lads were winning ball and turning around and looking to feed the full back line to get out of trouble, because they knew that if they ran up the sideline, they were going into a cul-de-sac of clear players, so they turned around. And that was just, I suppose, an indication of what Derek and the management have been doing, you know, I suppose, this team maturing as well as a team. And look, to be honest, I think if we're to do anything and we are to be successful, we have to be able, like, it's just the bottom line, you have to be able to play it both ways. You can't expect to say, well, we're a long ball team and we go out and we play long ball. That the game has gone well past that now. You have to be able to play the short game to be successful at Intercounty now. And like you said, under tough conditions, if you're able to do that against Clare on a tough, mucky day where Clare were fighting hard and doing good tackling, but you're still able to do that, that's a good indication that come championship, you'll continue to do that. And I think players as well will take confidence from, you know, their ability to go 70 minutes with Clare, playing like that. Okay, it wasn't polished the whole time. A few balls went astray. You'll have it. But, you know, I'm sure Derek and lads will compound that over the next few weeks and say, listen, lads, this is how we play now. And we need to stick to the plan.
All right. I think we'll leave the main pod there for this week. On the members pod, you're going to get the banter that we had to put to one side because of the hurling. We'll talk to Scale more about the fact that he's back in the light. The cows are going to have water now over the next while as well. So that's a nice little revelation ahead of the members pod, which we're going to get out straight away as he blesses himself for the audio listeners, because we are midweek now at this stage. So you will be able to get the members pod pretty much simultaneously. So if you leave us now, you hit play, you're pretty much going to hear exactly what we're going to talk about a few minutes after we record the main pod. So for now, for those who are listening gratis on the Hurling Pod feed, thank you, Paul Murphy.
Thanks very much, lads.
And thank you, James Skell.
You're welcome.
we will see you free listeners
I'm sorry.
And free viewers next week. If you're on the YouTube, because this edit is going to be a nightmare, you might just leave us a like as part of that, because my camera decided to disappear in the middle of this as well, so I've had to come back on. So it's going to be fun trying to edit all this. So if you could leave us a like, if you subscribe to the OTB account, that'd be fantastic as well, and we'll see you guys next week.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehu and Paul Murphy.